House Minority Leader Nancy Pelosi says Democrats will stand tall in support of the Affordable Care Act. Her comments came after several Democratic House members voted for a GOP bill to let people keep their existing health plans for another year. Meanwhile, Senator Ron Johnson of Wisconsin predicted in the National GOP Weekly Address that voters would give Democratic congresspeople the boot if they don't do something to stop the damage of Obamacare. What do you want to see happen? Good morning. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It's 8 minutes past 7 o'clock on this Tuesday, November 19th. We will talk about the latest developments in the Obamacare saga this hour, including the president last week saying insurance companies could renew canceled insurance plans and people could keep them for another year. Will healthcare.gov be ready to sign up more people by December? And what if that's not the case? Have you changed your mind on whether the Affordable Care Act is good policy or not based on the rocky rollout? Has your view of President Obama gone down because not everyone who liked their insurance plans were able to keep them? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. Let me welcome our guest. Larry Jacobs is Chair of Political Studies and Director for the Study of Politics and Governance at the Hubert Humphrey Institute and the Department of Political Science at the University of Minnesota. He is also the author of several books, including Healthcare Reform and American Politics. Good morning.
Good morning. Good
we'll talk about, yeah, it's good to have you back. I talk about a perfect guest for this hour. Lots of politics going on with this healthcare reform, isn't it?
It sure is. Mm. It actually was born in politics, of course, the 2008 election, and the effort to pass it in 2009 and 10 was high drama. Then you had the Supreme Court battle that went on for about a year and a half, the election, and now we're into the latest chapter in this ongoing saga.
Yeah. So in recent weeks, we had the rocky rollout of healthcare.gov, this website that doesn't work properly, very few people signing up, complaints then, too, about insurance policies being canceled, substandard insurance policies being canceled, and complaints that the president lied when he said, if you like your insurance plan, you can keep it. How ugly is this situation for the president and Democrats?
You know, the way I think of it is it's like you've thrown some meat into a piranha cage, and you just have a feeding frenzy. You know, if you could hit the stop button, there'd be a few things you could say, like, well, you know, last 6 weeks, the Federal Exchange is actually, you know, it's operating. I don't know if it's going to be able to handle the volume of, 50,000 or more people trying to sign up at one time. But it is working. And we are seeing a number of state-based exchanges doing much better than they were a month and a half ago. So, you know, there's that progress. I think there's other aspects of the reform that are in place and that are working. Great, great majority of the states are cooperating with some of the core reforms, such as enforcing new rules of the road for insurance companies. We don't even read about that in the paper because there's not much conflict about it, and states are kind of working with the federal government to put that in place. So, but that's very hard to say because I think, as you're suggesting, there's a kind of a political firefight, and the level of trust in the Obama administration is justifiably, you know, quite low at this point.
Yeah, President Obama on Thursday announced a fix that would let insurance companies renew plans for 1 year that had been canceled. So, is this going to calm this firestorm?
You know, I viewed that as almost entirely political. He was trying to literally do something to show mostly Democrats in Congress that he was on the case and would calm the storm, and maybe to get in front of Americans, let them know that he heard their anger and was responding to it. But to be honest with you, I don't think a whole lot is going to come from the president's announcement last week. when you really get into the fine print, it requires three sets of actors all to make decisions in order to make this happen. First set of actors would be the state regulators, and we've already seen a number of states come out and say, no, we're not going to actually do this. If the states were to allow it, then you would need the insurers to come forward and say, yeah, we're going to reissue these policies. And there are a lot of good business reasons for those insurance companies not to do that, the most obvious of which is their premiums have already been approved for this year, and for an insurance company to offer a new product, suggest a new rate and get that approved all within a month and a half is really dubious. And then you've got to have consumers who are going to say, yeah, I'm going to do this. And there may be some reasons why consumers might not want to jump back into those policies that are going to have, in many cases, less benefits and cost more than what they could get when the federal exchange is working.
Yeah. So is the president trying to make a point in a way by, you know, nobody really or very few people really want these policies anyway? The insurance companies canceled them and they don't want to renew them?
I think what he's trying to do is shift the conversation from him denying something to people to saying, you want it, go ahead and get it. But the reality is now we're having states kind of looking into it. And, you know, like in Minnesota, for instance, Governor Dayton was ecstatic about the president's offer and pretty much said, we're going to do this. Well, then the insurance companies weighed in and said, wait a second, not a good idea. And the governor, yes, they reversed himself and said, no, Minnesota's not going to do it. And we've seen, you know, I think now that the states and the insurers have this hot potato in their lap, they're saying, no, we don't want it. So, yes, I think you're right. The president was making a point. That's why I say I think this was almost entirely political. At the end of the day, it probably won't have some of the bad effects that the policy could have had if it was actually implemented.
Yeah. And, of course, 1 year would take us past the midterms.
It would take us past the midterms, exactly. And I think, you know, that was politics here and the upcoming elections are on everybody's mind in Washington.
Yeah. Now, on Friday, the House passed a bill that would extend current plans into the next year, even if they don't meet minimum coverage standards, these so-called substandard plans. 39 Democrats voted for that bill. What does that tell you?
Panic.
Yeah.
I mean, you just look at what we've just talked about. It's the feeding frenzy. And the president is now into kind of George Bush territory in terms of his disapproval ratings and the confidence in him and the job he's doing on health reform is also sinking. So when you see a sinking ship, you're seeing a lot of kind of passengers jumping overboard. And Democrats don't want to be – they're looking for some cover, some distance from the president. And I think, you know, for the president, the question will be, you know, is this issue going to basically calm down now? You know, the news cycle is already on to Iran and Israel, and there'll be some budget conversations coming up. If that happens – and the federal exchange website starts to work, and we're starting to see signs of that, then I think maybe he can kind of try to pivot. I don't know how successful it'll be, but I think the president needs to change conversation because clearly members of his own party are starting to desert him.
Let me have you react to House Speaker Nancy Pelosi when she was asked about this on Meet the Press on Sunday. She said she's confident that Democrats are not bailing on the health care issue. Let's take a listen to what she said.
I don't think you can tell what will happen next year, but I will tell you this. Democrats stand tall in support of the Affordable Care Act.
Do you think that's true?
I think it's mostly true. The folks, the 39 Democrats who signed up with the so-called Upton plan were Democrats facing tough reelection battles. And you know, the way this usually works is the leadership will huddle with those members who they're, you know, they're worried about losing them. And they'll say, okay, you get to, you know, free vote on this to vote your conscience rather than stand with the party. So, I think Speaker or the former Speaker could be correct that Democrats are largely holding together. You know, we'll see what happens in the Senate. I'm not seeing kind of a headlong rush in among Democrats. There's been talk of it, but so far not a whole lot of action.
No.
If you were to see both House Democrats in larger numbers and growing numbers, along with Senate Democrats coalescing around some kind of significant policy shift, that would be worrisome to the White House because it would signal a complete loss of faith or something close to that, and the possibility that legislation could be passed that would have a whole lot of other things in it that would take apart the president's signature legislative achievement.
Well, Wisconsin's Senator Ron Johnson gave the weekly Republican address, and he had a warning for his Democratic colleagues. Let's take a listen.
Democrat senators must help Republicans pass legislation to limit the damage of Obamacare. If not, those who choose to ignore the plight of millions of Americans should be replaced next November by those who will act.
Yeah, so you're saying you don't think Senate Democrats need to be worried?
No, I think they should be worried, but I think at this point they're not ready to jump ship.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, right now, terrible situation, feeding frenzy. You know, where were you going to be in a month, 3 months, 6 months? It's still quite possible that by the end of the sign-up period, March 31st, you're going to have somewhere, you know, 4 or 5, maybe even 7 million people having signed up for the Affordable Care Act's new insurance policies. And then Democrats will have something to point to in a positive way. This has been a rocky rollout, but, you know, the story is still unfolding, and behind the scenes there have been some, you know, eager beavers reworking the web page, and there are things happening in the states. So it's the story as of October 1st, which was disaster, not the same story today.
We are talking with Larry Jacobs. He is chair of political studies and director for the study of politics and governance in the Hubert H. Humphrey Institute and the Department of Political Science at the University of Minnesota. And he is the author of Health Reform and American Politics. And we are talking about the latest politics of Obamacare. And we welcome your questions and your reactions. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. How confident are you that the Affordable Care Act's rocky rollout will smooth out over time? Or do you think that this political fight is just beginning? I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network. We are talking about the politics of the Affordable Care Act. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It is 22 minutes past 7 o'clock on this Tuesday, November 19th. We are talking with political scientist Larry Jacobs, and our lines are full, so let's go to the phones. Kenna in Janesville is with us. Hello, Kenna.
Yes. A whole lot of lies that are not being dealt with because the people that were setting up the computers for the law only had about 5% of the time, 95% of the time they were trying to save money because they didn't know what the law was going to say due to the court fights, etc. They only had 5% of those over 2 years to set up the computers.
Yeah, so you don't blame the president or Democrats or the Affordable Care Act itself for this?
No, and it's a great big lie. People are able to keep the plans they wanted with the government. With the law's improvements And it's not an issue. People are able to keep their plans.
All right. What about that, Professor Jacobs? That's a lie that people can't keep their plans. What about these insurance policies that were canceled? I don't understand.
Well, you know, the policies that are canceled. This is a generic issue where you've got a new law that comes in to being with regulations. The whole purpose is to kind of sweep out the old situation that wasn't in line. So the bottom line here is we are shifting from an insurance market that was highly segregated. It was broken into different groups based on whether you're a woman, whether you're older or younger, whether you had pre-existing health conditions, and saying, let's create one large pool of people. And that's going to, in general, lower premiums and provide a more affordable premium for everybody. But if you're, you know, part of the one-third or so that are healthier and younger, you're going to pay a bit more in your premium. So these canceled policies were policies that were carved out for certain people, perhaps because they were in the individual market and it doesn't cover hospital emergency rooms very generously or at all. They don't cover maternity care and other things. And it's saying, we're now moving to a new system. That transition was always going to be painful. And, you know, the president overstated when he kind of had this blanket point about if you're one of the insured, then you can keep your policy. And that's kind of what he's gotten hung on. If he'd had a qualifying word in there, he probably wouldn't be as much trouble.
And what about this, that there wasn't enough time to set up the healthcare.gov website?
Well, you know, you could have sympathy for some of the worker bees trying to set this up, but to be honest with you, the more we know about what happened, I don't think that really cuts it. There were just terrible management and failure to really engage. The president has health reform as his signature issue, and there was just a kind of a failure to take it seriously. It reminds me of the second debate that the president had with Mitt Romney. You may remember that's the one where he didn't really show up. And on this, It really was not driven by the White House. We see that within the agency charged with implementing this, there was chaos. And we know from people who are in the software business that the code that was written was done in a really substandard way. There appears to have been understanding that the system was not going to work. It wasn't properly tested. No. So I don't think time was the only issue here. No doubt that wasn't helpful, but there were a lot of problems here that should have been handled.
Yeah, the president said that the healthcare.gov problems would be fixed by the end of the month. Does it look like that's going to happen?
Well, this is a case where he did introduce a qualifier. He said, for most people, most of the time. So he's not saying for everybody. And I think that's an open question, but it's not impossible that it's going to be working. Already we know from information they're releasing that the speed of the web pages are increasing. They've made some, I think, smart redesign decisions. I logged on myself and was able to move pretty quickly. I didn't fill out an application because I don't want to be disruptive of the process. But when I tried to do this in early October, I couldn't do anything. So, my sense is that things are picking up, and I think they'll have, you know, some progress to report by, end of this month, whether it's able to handle, the kind of traffic that it was talked about is, I think, the open question. But progress is definitely being made, and I think for folks who think of the federal website as completely broken, that's no longer the case. It is working.
Yeah, Tara from Minocqua writes, so with the combination of talking to the help desk and changing browsers, Explorer worked for me. I eventually got through on healthcare.gov, and I found out that my insurance options were better than what I had before. But then we have Michael in Minocqua who says that's not the case. Michael, for you?
Yeah, we have Security Health, and through the years, 25 or so plus years, babies were born, everything was taken care of. Then here, just slightly less than a year and a half or two ago, they changed to a $30 copay for every time you went in, plus our premium raised. And then now, shortly, I would say less than 6 months to a year ago, it went to $1,500 deductible for each one of us, and our premium went up. And now, as of Friday, well, we got a decision on a plan, but, and I'm not sure about this, but the way I understand it, our deductible per person goes to $6,000, and our premium also goes up, but I don't know if we still have a choice on a lower deductible for a higher premium, but I know that that's what was just discussed, and my wife is kind of up in arms about it, and I'm thinking, why didn't nothing change for 23 years, and now the last 2 years of this healthcare thing, my insurance policy is throwing us to the weeds, I think.
$6,000 deductible. I'd be bummed about that, too. But, you know, we have just 30 seconds before a news break. Can you give us a start and we'll finish after news, Professor Jacobs?
Yeah, I think for Michael, he's talking about his private health insurer. And my suggestion to him would be to get on the phone and talk to some of the people at the healthcare.gov. I think he's going to have more choices depending on his income level and the size of his family. He could well get a subsidy to lower his premium as well as help paying for some of those deductibles and the copays. So I think he could well end up being an example of someone who's helped by health reform.
We're going to check news and then we'll be back. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network. We are talking with a guest analyst who is an expert on the politics of health reform, and we are talking about the latest politics of the Affordable Care Act. Our guest is Larry Jacobs. He is chair of political studies and director of the study of politics and governance in the Hubert H. Humphrey Institute and the Department of Political Science at the University of Minnesota. And we welcome your questions and your reactions. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It is 7:37 on this Tuesday, November 19th. Before we go back to the phones, Professor Jacobs, I wanted to ask you about the situation with states. You had mentioned in our first half hour that many of the states that set up their own exchanges, things are going just dandy. Not in Wisconsin, where Governor Walker did reject federal money to expand Medicaid. Now he is asking the state legislature to go into special session and is asking for a 3-month delay in moving some 77,000 people off of Wisconsin's Medicaid or Badger Care program, since there are these problems getting into the federal exchanges. And looks like the legislature is probably going to grant that request. Governor Walker doing the right thing here, or is this political too?
Very political. Mm. I mean, you know, I understand the governor's concern, and I think there is a tremendous amount of uncertainty, which is reasonable. But I also think it's premature to be thinking that the federal exchange is not going to be able to handle the traffic. Again, from what I am seeing, what I am reading, and what I'm hearing from inside the administration from some very candid people is lots of improvements have been made, and they're going to be able to handle a lot more traffic. So, you know, if you think about the situation in, let's say, a month's time, by the December 15th deadline in order to get coverage by January 1st, we could well see much larger numbers of people getting coverage and paying the premiums to get their plans and being quite happy with it. Probably, you know, the vast majority of people who are going to get insurance coverage through the exchange are going to get much more comprehensive coverage for less money.
Yeah. Now, Minnesota set up its own exchanges, if I'm not mistaken, and things are going much better there. I've seen some comparisons of Wisconsin versus Minnesota, and the reason, I guess it's because Minnesota accepted the federal money and set up its own exchanges as to why Minnesota's doing better.
Yeah, I mean, Minnesota's, you know, it had a very rocky beginning. I mean, it was the first month of the exchanges was pretty bad, I think, almost everywhere. There were a few states like Kentucky and one or two others where things looked quite good. But Minnesota had a rocky beginning, but it's got its feet under it, and it's kind of humming along now.
Yeah.
And the benefit of Minnesota having, you know, gone its own way is that Minnesota, well, like Wisconsin, has had a long track record of providing very high-quality care at some of the lowest rates in the country. So Minnesota is offering the lowest insurance rates within its insurance exchange, and we don't have to rely on the federal government and, you know, whatever problems are happening there.
Governor Walker did warn Republicans not to spike the football over the Obamacare problems because he said Republicans shouldn't give the impression that they're happy about people losing coverage or paying more for it. How do you see Republicans playing this issue over the next few weeks, few months?
Well, you know, after the debacle on the effort to shut down the government and then to threaten default, Republicans were in a tailspin. And like a gift, the Obamacare bumbles at the start was just too much to believe, I think, for a lot of Republicans. And they gleefully latched onto that. And, you know, it's done huge damage to the president and Democrats. But, you know, I don't think this is where we were at the beginning of October is not where we are now. And I think the trajectory, as I understand it and as I'm seeing it, is upward. Now, whether it meets everybody's expectations, you know, I doubt that. But I think the Governor Walker is correct that Republicans should not be spiking, in part because a month from now we could be looking at a system that is working. And the truth is it already is starting to work as promised for some people.
Our next caller is Jim in Milwaukee. Hello, Jim.
Hello. As you know, I've called this station since 2009, and I thought this was going to be a bureaucratic nightmare, and I really think it has. But what they've talked about from the start was this is for people that had pre-existing conditions and couldn't get insurance, and now this all becomes available to them. But when you look at the medical device manufacturing tax, the high medical bills tax, and the flexible spending account tax, those are all hurting people that have made plans with pre-existing conditions, and that's their plan. Now they're being at they're being given these substandard plans, in my opinion. When okay, who's got high medical bills? People with pre-existing conditions. So instead of being able to claim over 7.5%, now you got to go up to 10%. That takes money right out of people's pockets who need that money for medical reasons, flexible spending account. They figure between those three taxes alone, it's $28 billion of combined taxes for the next 10 years. That means this year they're already going to spend $2.8 billion that they just took out of people's pockets. They're not considering it a tax or a penalty for not having insurance for that. It's just you're on your own to make sure you pay us that if you don't get insurance.
Yeah.
But
Jim,
for the rest of it, it's a tax.
Jim, can I ask you a question?
Sure.
When you describe the new health insurance plans under Obamacare, you describe them as substandard, I'm wondering.
No, I'm not talking about the plans. I'm talking about these things that are extra taxes that people have it. I'm in that situation, and I have a plan to cover my insurance, what my insurance doesn't cover.
Oh, I see. But you have
now
a Medigap.
I have a substandard approach at it because
you have a Medigap
they've taken
plan.
These away from me.
You have a Medigap plan to cover the gaps.
I have a plan right now. You look at a $2,500 annual cap on flexible spending. Mm-hmm. That doesn't even cover my cash out of pocket. That doesn't even cover my deductible, which I could parcel out over 12 months. And on January 1st, I had that entire amount available that I could budget over 12 months. I can no longer do that. Plus, I have to pay taxes on the amount over and above that I did not have to pay before.
Yeah. Well,
it's a situation, believe me, it is real, because they took that money out last year. They did that right on schedule. They did not look at a waiver. They did not look at exempting us. They just said, no, you've got high medical bills. You've planned for it. You need to pay more.
Yeah, and I think, you know, there's no doubt that the health reform is hurting, you know, some people. When you look at it as an entire population, the story with the taxes is it's, for the most part, falling on affluent individuals, that is, individuals earning $200,000 a year or more, or a family, a household of $250,000 or more. And then you've got these companies, each of whom is likely to do quite well under health reform. For instance, insurers, medical device manufacturers, pharmaceutical companies are all now going to be getting more customers. And so the deal that was made with those stakeholders was support reform, and we're going to tax you, and you're going to get these new customers. And it was a, you know, there are a lot of liberal Democrats who are furious at the Obama White House for cutting these deals, but this was not compulsory. This was an accommodation made between two powerful sets of interests.
Jim, thanks for the call. I want to go to Carl in Madison next, who's been waiting. Hi, Carl.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I called in and I stuck with it because I think that we're missing a very important part of the conversation over healthcare here. And I know people are concerned about what's going on with healthcare.gov. But the broader point that I wanted to make is there's a really simple solution to the healthcare.gov debacle, to the and that would remove the bureaucracy of the Affordable Care Act that makes it unnecessary for people, you know, to sign up in this complicated system, and that would be Medicare for all.
Yeah, is that a simple solution, Professor Jacobs?
It is definitely a simple solution, and Carl is an example of the kind of person I was referring to, who I think, you know, looks at this system that, in truth, came out of a series of practical negotiations with powerful stakeholders and with the reality in even a democratically controlled Congress, where you just didn't have support for Medicare for All, which is a form of single payer. So, yeah, it would be simple, but you know, there is a reality. You've got a large private insurance industry. You've got some other large industries. And you've got a Congress where there are a good number of Democrats who would not have supported single payer. For instance, in the Senate, I went and counted the votes. Democrats in 2009 and 10 were about, 7 to 8 votes short. So it was never, frankly, in the mix.
So with the rocky rollout and the problems with the Affordable Care Act as being reported, would this perhaps change minds that, hey, this is too complicated, we need Medicare for All?
Well, that's a really interesting question. Thanks for asking it. That is a real possibility. There are a good number of folks who have been committed to health reform for a long time. They ended up supporting what the Democrats and President Obama put together, but they always thought the idea of having these health insurance exchanges in 50 states, with each state making a decision on Medicaid, was far too complicated and cumbersome. And as Carl just said, much simpler to go to Medicare for All. So you could have two reactions if Obamacare implodes. One would be Republican and conservative reaction, which is, we told you government can't do this. And to be honest, I think that argument has the upper hand at this moment. But then you're going to have Democrats and certainly liberals saying, we told you so. We should have just gone for the simpler solution. So in that way, you could think of Obamacare as a compromise approach between the left and the right. And to be honest with you, if you put on your thinking cap and you think of this in terms of what Richard Nixon's proposed, Bob Dole's proposed, the Heritage Institute, the Romney governorship, you can see many elements of what President Obama has put into place that look quite Republican, that have market-oriented dynamics to them.
We are talking with Larry Jacobs. He is a political scientist with the University of Minnesota. He is the author of several books, including Health Reform and American Politics. We are talking about the politics of Obamacare, the very latest developments on the rollout of the Affordable Care Act, and how this might affect the 2014 midterm elections. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@WPR.org if you'd like to join in. This is the Ideas Network. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine. It's 9 minutes before 8 o'clock on this Tuesday, November 19th. And our next caller on the politics of Obamacare is Clyde in Denmark. Hi, Clyde.
Good morning. I would like to point out that our Senator Ron Johnson was interviewed on this program about 2 weeks ago, and he brought up an example of a couple that was whose insurance was being canceled. That couple was on the high-risk insurance program from the state of Wisconsin, which I am also on because I have pre-existing conditions. Wisconsin is one of the only two states in the nation that have that kind of a program. So if they had lived in another state, those people would not have had insurance in the first place. The reason the HRSA program is being discontinued is because the new policies cannot discriminate against you for having pre-existing conditions. And so Mr. Johnson was being very misleading when he use that couple as an example. They should be able to find as good of or better insurance at a similar or lower rate than what they had before.
Clyde, I wish I could remember precisely or had the tape. I don't know if this couple who both had cancer were in this high-risk pool that you're specifically
talking about. He said that they were in the HRSA program, mm-hmm. the high-risk Wisconsin program. And you can't get in that unless you have pre-existing conditions for health. And Wisconsin is one of only two states in the nation that has such a program.
I think he said then that they were offered other insurance plans or found other insurance plans, but their deductibles and their premiums would double under them.
Well, you should investigate that because I really doubt.
Well, that's what he said. So
yeah, right. Mm-hmm. That's what he said.
Yeah, and but you don't know that this couple did have higher costs with.
No, I don't, and I don't think he does either.
Yeah, you don't know this specific example, Professor Jacobs, but some people are finding that they are going to pay more for insurance under the Affordable Care Act. Is that's a truth, isn't it, or isn't it?
Well, there will certainly be some people, mm-hmm. particularly those who are healthy now and younger. Who are now going to go into a new insurance market where the cost for everybody, people like Clyde, who's very sick, are going to be averaged with those who are healthy and younger. So, yeah, that group is going to face higher premiums. But for people who are ill or disabled or older or women, they're going to, I think, in general, find a system that provides more comprehensive care, that is, more services, and they're going to find a premium once you take into account the subsidies for both the premium and the cost of the cost sharing of deductibles and copays. That's lower. So this is a new day, and I think a lot of the concerns that people have is that the old policies are being transitioned out as these more comprehensive policies are being brought in, and the Obama administration blew it by not having that website ready to go so people who are being canceled or being faced with new plans could immediately see what was available. And I think once that happens, once they can see, okay, this is what I can get instead, I think most people are going to feel reasonably good about it. But, you know, we're all feeling uncertain, and in this, you know, environment where there's so much political fighting and in which there's a lot of scare tactics being used on both sides, Everyone's understandably nervous.
And I'm glad Clyde called in, and I do remember that particular example that Senator Johnson gave on this program. He wasn't going to give the names of the couple. There have been, though, also reports, examples in the media of people saying, I'm going to be paying, you know, way more for my insurance, but then when you check it out on the exchanges, they could get a better deal. So
exactly, and that's been my experience, too, that when folks come forward, and, you know, we had someone earlier, Michael, who was talking about higher premiums and higher deductible under the old system. And my hunch is if we sat down with Michael and kind of walked through what's now going to be available, that he'd see it's probably going to be a better deal. Those are the averages, that this is really going to be a system where people who, you know, there were cases around the country of families who had paid their premiums for years, and the mother would get breast cancer or uterine cancer, and they would be dropped by the insurer. This is what was going on before 2010, and all that nonsense is now gone. It's a whole new day, and we're in a transition, and it's a little unnerving. I understand that, and there was a major botch by the Obama administration.
Dave in Menominee. Hi, Dave.
Hi. Good morning. You know, I think we have to think about how the old system was when, you know, we'd be encouraged by the Republicans to just go into the emergency room, and nobody has denied. We hear Rick Perry from Texas constantly saying that the people down there all have access to health care. But, you know, it all costs us everybody money when everyone, you know, when people have to go into the emergency room. Everyone pays for that because the hospital passes those costs on. And I look forward to when that is gone. I think we have to, you know, take a step back. Republicans seem to like to stick us in the front row of the movies, so we can't really see the screen, can't really see everything that's going on, and we need to, you know, maybe sit in the back and get a big picture that in the long run, we will be healthier, healthcare costs will come down because we will be healthier.
Dave, thank you very much. Do you think Dave's predicting what's going to happen, Professor Jacobs?
Well, I wouldn't put a partisan spin on it. I think there were a lot of problems in the system that existed before 2010 that will be addressed. The thing that I find very interesting, and I don't think most people are really aware of this, is that the major folks who run the healthcare system, the hospitals, the doctors, the private health insurers, are all looking at this reform with trepidations. They've got complaints. They're lobbying for some leniency. But they're also all saying, yeah, this is what we need to be doing. And you'll notice that when the president came out with his fix, it was the insurers going back to him and saying, wait a second, we're all geared up for this new system. You can't be, you know, sandbagging us and taking us back to the old system. So I think that's important to keep in mind. It's your doctor, it's your hospital, and it's the insurers that have been covering you. They're already in the new world. And it's, you know, it's this very awkward, uncertain transition period we're in right now.
We're going to have to leave it there. It's been a very interesting and informative hour. Thanks very much for being with us.
Good to be with you.
Larry Jacobs is author of Health Reform and American Politics. He's with the University of Minnesota. Thanks to Bill Martins and Christy Taylor for producing and directing this program. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network.